My name is Jane Farr. I'm an adult heart transplant cardiologist, and I'm also a member of the thoracic committee for UNOS. And I'm going to spend about 10 minutes and tell you a little bit more about the new heart allocation policy that was passed in December of 2016 and is going to be implemented in December 2017. Okay, so the first thing that you need to know is why it passed. So one of the things that the thoracic committee was charged was to address the issue that from 2006 to the present time, there's been a greater than 500% increase in the number of 1A patients listed with a three times the rate of mortality of any other status category. In addition to that, not all 1A patients are the same, and there's disparate wait list mortality statistics based on whether you're, you know, in the hospital dying on a biventricular support device or whether you're home with a driveline infection. And so there needed to be some better accounting to all the ways in which the 1A patients were different from each other. In addition, there was an increasing number of status exception requests made during this time to account for certain phenotypes that just have never fit into any of the policies, and that is our patients like congenital heart disease, refractory ventricular tachycardia, and then finally all the device complications that have developed over the years, that all of this was going to exception request and regional review boards were becoming overwhelmed. One of the final reasons is that there was a growing sense of disparity between geographic regions. So, for example, if you have, there's region X and here's region Y, and you have a donor right there, based on this, let's say this is the donor service area, this heart is going to go to this 1B patient at home instead of just going right across state lines to this 1A patients in the hospital. We had to really account for how to do better for this particular patient when this patient can wait a little bit longer, and to try to come up with some better understanding of how to do a more ethical, broader sharing. So these were the reasons that a new policy was sort of put on the table in 2012. The thoracic committee then debated on how to approach drafting a new policy. They had to make some important decisions on whether to try to start to develop a heart allocation score or whether to take the three current existing tier statuses and take those three and turn it into what ended up to be six. And so they went with the six-tier definition with the hope of having a mandatory data collection to ultimately do a heart allocation score in the future. The thoracic committee formulated a straw man of six-tier statuses and asked the Scientific Registry of Transplant Recipient Data Analysts to take those six tiers and run what's called a TSAM modeling or a thoracic simulation allocation modeling, and to just walk through and take that cohort of patients and put them and provide donor examples and to see if you had had them in six tiers rather than six, would there be a benefit to waitlist mortality? And there was. So that ended up being the basic framework of the six tiers. The other final decision we had to make is to try to, once we had our six tiers, we had to try to determine who were the sickest patients on the tiers and then to offer broader sharing. So we ended up doing that for tiers one and two. So let me give you some examples of patients and walk through some of the tier system. So if you had a heart failure patient on oral medical therapy and you wanted to list them for transplant, you would just put them here. So this is an old status two, you would be a tier six. If your patient, let's say in tier six, developed renal failure and you determined that you needed a dual organ transplant, that patient would go here now, let's say heart kidney. Okay. So for tier status four, patients in tier status four include patients with congenital heart disease, patients with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy or other restrictive physiology. Before I get to more patients in tier four, what's important to understand is while there was an advance in trying to finding a category for patients with congenital heart disease in particular, so tier four rather than tier six where they might have been previously, you know, this seemed to be somewhat unsatisfactory for many folks who weighed in on this policy. And ultimately, there's a guidance document that's being developed to try to figure out where some of these patients, how they might move up the statuses as they get sicker. Let me just leave it at that for right now. Other patients in the tier four status are a stable LVAD at home, a stable patient at home on a single inotrope would be a tier four. So if you had a patient who is a stable VAD patient who developed a device complication. So right ventricular failure, for example, that patient would now be a tier 3 VAD with complication, but specific complications. So RV failure, the one complication that took an LVAD patient to tier 2 was a device malfunction. And that's important. Well, that's sometimes a little bit hard to define. That's important because an LVAD patient with a true device malfunction goes to tier 2 and then gets broader sharing. I think people were satisfied, you know, with that. Other patients that fit into these tiers, for example, are refractory VT with a VAD is a tier 1. And there are certain criteria that need to be met to demonstrate refractory VT, which include a number of shocks on intravenous therapy in the hospital, and that's all laid out in the policy. Also in Tier 2 is refractory VT without a VAD. Okay. Now, what really people, I think, want to know is what about all those patients in Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 who are in cardiogenic shock? The ones that get put on VA ECMO or a biventricular support device, the ones where a total artificial heart is instead chosen, which is a tier 2, or thirdly, whether your patients in cardiogenic shock, but you're going to bring them in or put them on dual high-dose inotropes and keep a continuous monitor. And so the important thing about these sicker patients in shock is, number one, you now had to demonstrate that your patient actually was in shock. So we worked off the definition, the AHA definition of cardiogenic shock, where there are some major criteria and some minor criteria. That's not exactly how AHA lays it out. But what we came up with is, if you've got a patient in cardiogenic shock and you, for example, they came in and you placed a VA ECMO device in tier 1, you had to demonstrate they were in shock by, number one, their systolic blood pressure was less than 70. Number two, their cardiac index off inotropes was less than 1.8. Three, their wedge pressure was greater than 15. Or if you didn't have a catheter in at the time of shock, you had to demonstrate that CPR had been performed, or an arterial lactate was greater than 4, or transaminase is greater than 1,000. That's all in the policy. Your patient's in shock, you make a decision on VA ECMO. Okay, so VA ECMO for tier 1, now you've got broader sharing, but that's good for only 7 days. And at 7 days, you need to do two things. You need to, number one, document as a source document that the patient has a contraindication to a durable support device. And then, two, you've actually done a weaning trial and there's failure to wean in order to get renewal retrospectively from your regional review board. If you can't demonstrate that and you continue to keep your patient on this device, they will drop down to a tier 3. Okay, so let's go to another area. So tier 2, you've got a patient who comes in also in cardiogenic shock, but you've made the decision that you're going to put, let's say, an Impella device or a non-surgically implanted endovascular temporary support device, such as an Impella. Number one, so you need to meet this shock definition after now 14 days. So VA ECMO is the most restrictive. After 14 days for Impella, you have to demonstrate, one, contraindication to durable support, and two, failure to wean in order to get that renewal. You don't get that renewal, down you go to 3. And that down you go to 3 step is really to keep tiers 1 and 2 broader sharing to the most restricted categories. Other device therapies that are here, back up in tier 1 is a BiVAD. But here for BiVAD, it's a surgically implanted, and so we're talking sternotomy or thoracotomy, biventricular support device where you cannot leave the hospital, like a BiVAD Centromag. That's 14 days. There's no requirement here to demonstrate weaning. It's biventricular support. So that's tier 1. Tier 2, back to tier 2, other categories are total artificial heart, RVAD, where you can go home, and then a VAD with a single ventricle. And the way these went down is, so what's the difference between a total artificial heart and a biventricular support device? Well, the way this was sort of thought through was that you actually could go home with a total artificial heart. You can go home with an RVAD, maybe an RVAD HVAD. And you can go home with a VAD with single ventricle physiology, but it is absolutely recognized that these are very high-risk patients such that they are in the broader sharing category. So I think I've probably given you a fair number of examples on how to use the tier. Some of the final pieces of the policy is number one is mandatory data collection. So we want to know about cardiogenic shocks, so we're going to collect all that data. We want things to be objectively as fair as possible. The final piece of this policy is to really have a data collection piece. So in addition to all the cardiogenic shock data that needs to be documented for these top-tier statuses, there's other data, labs and functional status, et cetera, that apply to all of the patients. And the purpose of that mandatory data collection is to ultimately develop a heart allocation score, which is really what I think everyone is really looking for. This mandatory data collection also includes documenting in UNOS a calculated CPRA just for the purposes of data collection so we can really try to get at the issue of sensitization. So I think that's the new heart allocation policy in 10 minutes or less. Thanks.